This week's parsha is Kisisa, and right in the middle of the Torah's presentation about the Mishkan, all of a sudden we have this colossal, horrible, very depressing story of a Chet Ha'Egel, the sin of the golden calf. And we're not going to have time to discuss every single aspect. There's so many factors, and there's so many things to look at in the story. You know, what were the Jewish people thinking? What were they doing? The role of Aaron, the reaction of Moshe, the reaction of God. So I'm just going to focus on a couple of points this evening, just to begin the thinking, the conversation. Hopefully, over Shabbos, you can look into the look in the Chumash and you know, look more, make some more insights and observations yourself. You know, in Jewish, you know, history, you know, we look at the Chet Ha'Egel as this ongoing tragedy and mistake. In fact, we have a fast day for Chet Ha'Egel, right? Shavasar b'Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, which most famously, you know, we fast in connection to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Shavasar b'Tammuz is the time when the commemorating the walls of Yerushalayim being breached. Actually, as a side point, there's the Gemara wonders, time of the Bais Rishon, the first Beis HaMikdash, seems like the walls were breached on the ninth day of Tammuz, not the 17th. So the Gemara gives a couple answers, but the Gemara's first answer is that, well, the 17th of Tammuz is when it was breached during the second Beis HaMikdash. And since we're still impacted by the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, should we commemorate the breaching of the walls of Yerushalayim? When it happened during Bais Sheni. In any event, the Mishnah points out in Maseches Tanis that was not the first tragic event that to occur on the date of the 17th of Tammuz, but the first tragic event was in fact the Chet Ha'Egel, the sin of the golden calf, which makes it even worse on many levels. Because if the sin of the golden calf happened on the 17th of Tammuz, the question is, like, what happens? Just a few days earlier, just the previous month in Sivan, they stood at the foot of the mountain. They said Naaseh V'Nishma. They heard the Ten Commandments, which says you shall not make a granny graven image. And all of a sudden, they're building a golden calf and they're worshiping a gold. It really is very troubling. So again, as I mentioned a few moments ago, we're not going to be able to answer all the questions and address every single point this evening, but just to share a couple of things that that commentaries say. So the way it's presented in the Chumash, it's in Perek Lamed Beis, chapter 32. Vayara'am ki boshesh Moshe l'redes. The people got nervous. Moshe is up on the mountain, and somehow he's delayed. Rashi quotes Chazal that maybe they miscalculated the 40 days, and all of a sudden, again, they're nervous. They don't know where he is. Like Aaron, so the people go to Aaron. It's Aaron's left in command. They go to Aaron, to Moshe's brother Aaron. Yomri and they say to him, "Kuase lana." The first thing they say is, "Go make us a god." That they, and this is in plural. We'll see in a second that they will go before us. Because this man Moshe, who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know where he is. We're nervous. So I'll say Lanu Elokim. So Elokim, you know, Elokim in the Torah, either refers to God sometimes in certain some contexts, many contexts. Sometimes it refers to gods, idols, and sometimes Elokim refers to like a leader, a judge. Right? Elokim is often referred to as a judge. So, you know, maybe they're just asking for a judge, a replacement, but it's aseilon is, you know, make for us, something craft for us, not a point, but make for us. So what is what's Aaron's response? Aaron, so you could now, and one of the other major questions is Aaron's actions and all this. So, you know, you could just say, what should have Aaron done? Just relax, calm down. Let's wait a little bit. Let's see what happens. Don't get nervous. My brother Moshe, is that the first time he did? He just disappeared for a little bit. Last time he disappeared for, what did we say? We saw a few weeks ago. He disappeared for, was it 60 years or something? You know, so it's only been a couple hours. Hopefully it won't be as long as last time, the 60 years. So he could have said that, but he didn't say that. Vayomer Eliam Aaron, Harkud Nizmeya Zahav Asher Baznei Nishecha. Take the gold earrings that your wives have, Benechem, Benesechem, your daughters, your sons, all the gold. The view of lion, bring it to me. And Rashi here in Chazal is trying to defend Aaron. They assume that Aaron was trying to stall. You know, that the assumption was that their wives, the children, wouldn't be so quick to give up their jewelry, take some time to collect it all. Now, clearly, Aaron understands the request to make some sort of image. Right? It's not to appoint, some sort of judge, some sort of leader, but it's to make some image. So Aaron tells him to do that. By Yisparku kol amas nizmei hazahav asher b'zneihem by Vil Aaron, they do it. They gather together, and seems like they do it pretty quickly. By Yikach mi adam, he takes the gold from them. By Yatzar oso b'charet by Yasil lo ego masecha, and they make some sort of image, some like of a calf, a gold, right? The golden calf. By Yomru, and here it's really odd and strange and very difficult. And they say, Yisrael, this is your God Israel who brought you out of Egypt. And I saw the Cheskuni in his commentary. He says, V'chisholtim hayu? Were they such fools? Lomar ki ha'egel zeh shenasa yom? That this golden calf that they just formed within the last few minutes that they made today, Mizah from Gohotim, that this golden image calf brought them out of Egypt? Right? Are they crazy? Like, what kind of statement is this? So he gives an answer that he gives, but this is like, it's a fundamental question. Like, what did it mean? Like, what do they mean? This is what brought you out of Egypt. Doesn't make any sense. Vayar Aaron sees, he sees what's going on. Vayivim is Bech Lefanav, and he creates an altar. Vayikra Aaron Vayomar. So Aaron again seems to be now stalling once again. Chag Lashem Machar, we'll make a party tomorrow to God. Lashem, to Hashem. Like, you know, go home and, tomorrow. Vayashkimu Imacharas, they get up the next day and offer the Torah. Vayashkimu is Lashem like Zariz, like quickly, like Avram, right? He gets up early in the morning to go to the, before the Akedas Yitzchak. Vayalu Alos, they offer sacrifices, Vayagishu Shlamim, peace offerings, Vayeshev Am Lechol, and they sit down to eat, Vishasu, and they drink, Vayakumu Litzachek, and they get up Litzachek. Litzachek is in Tanakh is often a word that's a promiscuous behavior, something not so kosher, something not great going on. And Moshe is up on the mountain, he's learning Torah with Hashem, and then all of a sudden Hashem tells Moshe, get out of here, go down, the people have corrupted their ways, and you have the whole response of Moshe breaking the tablets, and Hashem wanting to destroy the people, and Moshe intervening. There's a lot here to unpack. Again, we're not going to have time to go through everything, but what were they thinking? What were they thinking? So clearly they were scared, right? Clearly that they were frightened. Something happened, a miscalculation, and they panicked. Now, the Mefarshim struggle as to, was this Avodah Zarah? Like, again, they were at Har Sinai. They're at Har Sinai. The Torah, Matan Torah, was just a short while ago. They heard the Ten Commandments. So, the Gemara in several places is, it was Avodah Zarah. Yeah, in fact, the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah tells us, Ela mi defalchu b'Yisrael lego, daf nun gimel v'deveis, that when the Jewish people were serving, the golden calf in the desert, right? They revealed what they were thinking, that idolatry of Avodah Zarah was acceptable to them. In other words, that little had changed. The question is, when the Jews were in Egypt, so they were exposed to a lot. They were exposed to Egyptian culture, Egyptian society. And the sign of that, what people did back then was idolatry. And so, you know, to so quickly change and to be a new people, I often like to quote, when I was growing up, I went in day school. So I remember we had music class. So I think once a year, once every couple of years, the music teacher, she showed us My Fair Lady. And there's always that wonderful scene at the end of the first act, I believe, you know, when there was Eliza Doolittle, if I remember her name correctly, right? The bet, they try to turn her into a lady. And they think that, you know, in a short while that they got it. I remember they bring her to the horse racing, right? And in London, and it's like this, it was a place for the aristocracy, and everyone came, and you know, you're wearing your finest clothing, and all of a sudden she starts, you know, in a conversation, and it just goes downhill from there. That she very quickly reverts back to her old ways. Of again, this woman who was taken off the street, the lower class and uneducated, and then it reached this pinnacle when you know they're watching the actual horse race, and her horse starts falling behind, and she lets out this something I can't repeat, but you know she curses and she you know and she totally acts unladylike, and it's at that point that they realize they got a lot of work to do. Right, the transformation is not going to occur overnight, and it's going to take ongoing you know, effort and work, and it's going to be a process. And so, according to Chazal, you know, this approach in the Gemara, they reverted back very quickly to Avodah Zarah, and in fact, they were in fact worshiping Avodah Zarah. That's one approach that's taken. Another approach, Rashi. Seems to invoke this approach. Rashi picks up on the fact Asher Yelchu Lefaneno. Yelchu is not that Yelech Lefaneno. It will go before us, but they will go before us. And therefore, Rashi says Elohos Harbe Iyu Lahem. There were many gods here. In other words, Rashi could be saying is that. Yeah, they believed in God, but they also believed in the time of other types of gods. It wasn't like it was a complete rejection of Hashem. It was still they still had this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they also were, again, still connected to the other idols that they were familiar with. That was their modus of, you know, that they were working with, of multiple gods. And therefore, they create this other type of a god, a representation of another god. So that's another approach that's given. On the other extreme is a whole slew of Meforshim who understand, the Ramban, Rav Hirsch, and many others, who understand that they weren't worshiping Avodah Zarah here. This wasn't idolatry. And in fact, it comes back to the question the Chizkuni said, like, what were they thinking? This is your God who took you out of Egypt? They just made this thing 2 minutes ago. So rather, what were they doing? They were creating a representation of God. And the Chizkuni is, I think, is often quoted as one of the most creative in defending this position and understanding. You know, so the question is, okay, so they built this golden calf to represent God. Well, why a golden calf? Like, you know, build a golden donkey. I don't know, things that they were familiar with. Why a golden, pyramid that they, you know, why a golden calf? So the Chizkuni, it's ingenious, his suggestion, is that he says, B'yaseo ego, below shar chaya, what any other animal, an alligator, hey, alligators were in Egypt, right, and frogs, like, why a calf? Below shar chaya, the fee, she'erav rav hitchilo ba'veira, b'ksiv zek kili vanveo, she'ro Yisrael shchina, right, the Jewish people had seen God. At the Yam Suf, right? They saw God, right? This is our God, and also at Sinai, right? Somehow they were told at the end of the Har Sinai experience, they somehow see the some image of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And if, in fact, if I'm supposed to get the exact pasuk, because it's very significant, and I think this is at the end of Mishpatim, if I remember correctly, where this is related. Let me get the exact quote. It really fits in really nicely when you his approach. Oh, here it says, "Vayal Moshe v'Aaron Nadav v'Yehu b'Shim v'Zikne Yisrael." That the Moshe and Aaron Nadav v'Yehu, these 70 elders, go up towards the mountain by Yeru es Elokei Yisrael, and they see the God of Israel. You don't understand exactly what this means. V'sachas raglav, and under his feet, k'maseh livnas hasapir k'etzem hashamayim latoar. Right? We can't even translate. They somehow see God and they see under his feet. Now, what does God look like? So what does his feet look like? So the only other description we have of something, and we don't understand this, the Gemara says, you know, I'll delve into it, of God and his likeness is from Yechezkel. When Yechezkel describes on this vision, this is the Haftorah for on Shavuos of seeing God's chariots. And he sees the angels that surround God's chair, and the angels have different faces, eagle and an image of a person. Well, lo and behold, what is one of the things that the images that is seen? So says he quotes Yechezkel, the Chesuni, "Shekaf ragleim kekaf regel egel," the feet of these angels that surround God's chariot, the feet have the image, look like the feet of a calf. And therefore, when at least the elders, when they saw whatever exactly they saw at Sinai of God, they says again, it says they saw the feet, they saw a calf. And therefore, if they want to make an image of God, what is the image? It's a calf. Right, that's the image, and that's why they create specifically a golden calf, because that reminds them of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem. And therefore, but according to this approach, so they're making a representation of Hashem, and this is the representation of Hashem who brought us out of Egypt, Now, of course, you can't do that, right? Not allowed to create an image of Hashem. And in fact, Rav Hirsch, very powerfully in his commentary here in our Parsha, clearly he's angling about the difference between Judaism and Christianity. He very much stresses the fact that in Judaism, you don't need an image of God. You don't need an intermediary to connect to God. Rather, we directly have a relationship with Hashem. We don't need any physical image. We don't need any human intervention. You know, your nervous Moshe is not here. Okay, someone else will lead. Well, you know, life will continue. But you always have your relationship with Hashem. Right? That's what they didn't yet understand that message. They didn't yet understand that lesson, and that was the mistake. Now clearly, the thing got out of control. Right? Clearly, if you want to argue that it started off okay with the best of intentions, that Aaron was trying to lay, at the end of the day, it was litzachek. Right? There was something not good going on at the end. And again, there's all question who was involved. Was it just this Erev Rav, this mixed multitude of patients that sort of joined them, or was this the entire Jewish people? But clearly from Hashem's reaction, right, it's bad. It's really bad. Right? Hashem wants to destroy the Jewish people. It's not good, the Eich HaZav. And I was just thinking, I just want to make two final points. You know, in Tanakh, this gets repeated. This is not the last time we're going to have an Egel HaZahav, a golden calf. In fact, we're going to have two Egel HaZavs, two golden calves. And if you don't remember what I'm referring to, so I'm invoking what happened after Shlomo HaMelech, when the kingdom split, the punishment of Shlomo for not following Hashem's ways. And so the kingdom splits as the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom, the 10 tribes, is led by Yeravam ben Nevat. And Yeravam gets a little nervous because he doesn't want the people three times a year to go to Yerushalayim. Because then they're going to see Shlomo's son, Rechavim, sitting on the throne. They're going to remember the good old days, and maybe they're going to try to reunite and dispose of Yeravam. And so Yeravam wants to keep the people. He wants to keep the people in not to go to Yerushalayim. So he needs to create some alternative place for them to worship. So what does he do? So this is in the Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Beis. He makes two golden calves. By Yomer Eliam, he says, tells the people, Rav Lachem Alos Yerushalayim. No longer do you have to go to Yerushalayim to worship God. Right, he puts one in the southern part of his kingdom, and I believe in Beitel, the other one, the other one in the north, in Dan, somewhere like the Golan Heights. Today you can go to the Golan, I think the Golan Heights, they show you the place where they think it was. I was actually in Yeshiva in Kerem Yavna. They took us there to show us. The Golden Calf isn't there anymore. It's been destroyed. Actually, you can see a bracha there. Brachos talks about, you see a place where there used to be a Avodah Zarah and it was destroyed, so there's a bracha to recite. And so look what he tells the people. Not only does he build two golden calves, he says to them, "Hinei Elokecha Yisrael Eshelucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim." This is your God Israel took you out of Egypt. It's amazing. Like, didn't they learn from what happened last time? Didn't Yeravam learn? But obviously they did not. And you see from here that that something bad, once it's done, once it's initiated, the results can be lasting, everlasting, for a very long time. And again, using this approach of the Ramban, reversed that, it was sort of true, sort of not true. It's, it was like sort of this representation of Hashem, but similar to what happened with the our Parsha, with Yeravam, it quickly gets out of control. And it turns into idolatry. It turns into Avodah Zarah. The last thing I just want to point out is that, the whole thing here, I saw that Rishmuel Golden in his Parsha, in his Sefer on Parsha, has a whole long, nice essay on this. This whole thing was like a dance around with the people about the relationship with Hashem. In other words, like, how close do they want to be to Hashem? He has in his book a very nice quote about, in other words, what's happening here is that, on the one hand, the people wanted to be close to Hashem, right? At Har Sinai, they wanted to hear from Hashem directly. But then when they hear from Hashem, what happens? They run away, right? It's too intense, right? And then, in this point here, they're scared. Then they feel they want Hashem. Because why do they want Hashem? They want Hashem, to protect them. They're in this desert all alone. They're frightened. And so, do they want God's closeness, or, to be close to them? Or they don't want God to be close to them? So he tells a story of Rabbi Golden about, he once gave a drush in his community early on in his career about the fact that many people, unfortunately, were eating at non-kosher restaurants. Dairy restaurants, and he gave a drush on Shas, pointing out, all the many, many halachic problems of going, to a non-kosher dairy restaurant, vegetarian restaurant. And he said, you got to be honest with yourself. If you want to do it, okay, do it, but understand you're eating treif. If you're okay eating treif, okay, it's a free country, do it, but, you got to decide, what you value, what's important to you. So he said that, the dean of the American Rabbinate, Rabbi Leo Young, is quoted as having said, "The job of the rabbi is to confront the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable." Right? That sometimes, we're in a comfortable place and like, leave me alone. Sometimes they got to push you out of that comfort zone. And so with the Jewish people, in the relationship with Hashem, what were they looking for? So on the one hand, they're looking for protection. All right, they're looking for the God who took them out of Egypt, who saved them from, from the afflictions of the Egyptian bondage, and the one who now was going to lead them through this desert, a place where there was no food, and provide mun for them, and provide water for them. and they're looking for God to take care of them, you know, which is often the relationship that we want with Hashem. We want Hashem, you know, constantly davening, heal us, save us, protect us, have compassion, give us parnasa. We want Hashem to hold us and to embrace us and to watch over us. So we all want that out of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in addition to that, there's also the Hashem who wants things from us, right? There's a Hashem who wants us to keep Shabbos. Hashem wants us to keep kosher. There's the Hashem who wants us not to speak Lashon Hara. Hashem wants us to give tzedakah to those in need, right? There's a Hashem who has expectations, who put us here in this world, you know, not to just party and have a great time, but to do great things, help our fellow man and to connect with Hashem. And, you know, for the Jewish people, you know, in this moment, so they sort of run away from Har Sinai, right? The intensity of the Aseres HaDibros is too much for them. Perhaps the demands are too much for them. But the moment that they're frightened, and also now we need God. Right now we want Hashem. And so the bottom line, it's going to be a process. Right, it's going to take a long time, and you know, and Hashem gets angry with them because Hashem says, if all you want is just me taking care of you, that's not what this is about. You know, I love you, but I put you here in this world for a reason. I made you into, you know, you're the chosen people. I gave you, make this covenant with you because you're supposed to represent me in this world. You're supposed to act in a way that reflects what godly values are about, and to indeed be a light into the nation. If you're not willing to accept that, then, you know, Moshe, maybe we need to look elsewhere. And so this is an ongoing challenge that we have as, you know, as a Jewish people, you know, about, you know, what exactly is our roles, our responsibility, you know, our relationship with Hashem. Is it on this like very basic level of just like a young child who is constantly taking from a parent and the parent's giving? But then is there a maturity? Is there an understanding that there's expectations that are placed upon us? And and one of the, you know, one of the warnings of the Chet Egel is how quickly, you know, we can make a mistake, how quickly we can go in the wrong direction, that we can misunderstand, you know, what we're supposed to be doing. And on some level, we can reject Hashem when we say, well, we don't want this. This is not for us. And, you know, we'll look elsewhere for protection and for guidance. It's a complete package. And it's Hashem is there for us. Hashem cares about us. But Hashem also wants things from us. And the Jewish people, as we continue to read through the Torah, is going to take some time to internalize, understand, and to create a healthy balance in terms of this relationship that they need to develop and create with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, wishing everyone a very good Shabbos.